If you're insured through the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange with New Mexico Health Connections, you need to know they recently left the marketplace, but they did create a resource for consumers about their coverage options. We'll tell you what those are. Today, we welcome the New Mexico Superintendent of Insurance, Russell Toll, to talk about actions taken by his office in response to COVID-19 to ensure access to COVID-19 testing and treatment. There's a new law that bans any surprise medical bills associated with COVID-19 treatment. What does that mean? Call with your questions, 575-646-2212. Voice of the Public is coming up next on KRWG. This is KC Counts. We'll get started right after NPR News. Good afternoon and welcome to Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. It's 106 and joining us this afternoon from Santa Fe, the New Mexico Superintendent of Insurance, Russell Toll, is on the line. Good afternoon, Mr. Toll.
Good afternoon. Hope all is well there.
Well, I don't know if all is well anywhere, Mr. Toll.
Good point.
Not completely well, anyway, but we are on the campus of New Mexico State University, and we have university students returning, and we have this hybrid model going on at the university,
right,
as many do, and I think everyone's just kind of shocked that we are in the end of August, and we haven't really gotten a break from coronavirus since the pandemic began in March.
Well, I think that's definitely true. And I think that the worst news for all of us is it's not going to go away anytime soon. We're going to be living with this dynamic, my guess is, or at least another 8 to 9 months.
For those who didn't know New Mexico had a superintendent of insurance, tell us what it is your office does.
It's a constitutionally created office. Years ago, it used to be a part or a department of the Public Regulatory Commission, but it was pulled out by the public in a vote on a constitutional amendment. The superintendent is selected by a nominating committee that is composed of individuals nominated by both the legislative leadership as well as the governor's office. It's a 9-member board. Their responsibility is to make the selection of a superintendent, and once they do, that superintendent is given a 4-year term. I was selected late last fall and started in this job January 1. The responsibilities here are amazingly broad, and I'm sure most people don't realize how much we do. We have over 180 some odd thousand people that we license. These are insurance agents, brokers, producers, adjusters, every kind of insurance-related individual you can imagine. We also license and review filings from every insurance company that wants to sell in the state of New Mexico. And we also have a responsibility under the Federal Affordable Care Act to review plans that are being proposed to be offered on New Mexico's Health Insurance Exchange, which is sometimes known or referred to as BWell-NM. And then finally, we also play an oversight role, and I chair, as superintendent, the board of the New Mexico Medical Insurance Pool, which most people know as the state's high-risk pool, which was created many years ago in an act of wisdom by the legislature to provide coverage for people who simply don't qualify for most insurance, or their conditions are such that the traditional health insurance plans don't meet their needs.
Lots to go over today.
Yes.
It is 109. And if you have a question for Russell Toll, the Superintendent of Insurance in New Mexico, we would love to hear from you. 575-646-2212 is the number to call to be part of Voice of the Public today with KRWG. You can also stream us from anywhere at krwg.org. You can follow along on social media. We are streaming on Facebook. If you feel more comfortable following along on Facebook, you can always ask a question there, and we will keep up with your comments on Facebook as well. So we welcome you to the show this afternoon, and it's hard to decide yet really where to begin, but there was a lot of confusion along the way, and I had to go back and look because I was convinced that at some point it was in my mind and continued to be in my mind that Americans weren't supposed to have to pay for care associated with coronavirus. And I was able to dig up some comments from President Trump from March 12th. Here's what he said.
Earlier this week, I met with the leaders of health insurance industry who have agreed to waive all co-payments for coronavirus treatments, extend insurance coverage to these treatments, and to prevent surprise medical billing.
So that did not turn out to be the case, I guess.
Well, a good part of what he talked about did go into the congressionally passed Federal CARES Act. But an important provision there is that the state is empowered to take other actions to protect consumers. And our office, I'm pleased to tell you, Casey, really moved aggressively on COVID. We were one of the first states in the country that required all health insurers to cover the cost of the tests and any of the related costs to collecting a specimen, as well as COVID-19 treatment, and to do so without any cost sharing or payment by the individual seeking the test or the treatment. So in New Mexico, since mid-March, basically, if an individual goes in for a test, they are not to be charged anything for that COVID test, whether a test is actually done, whether that test is negative or positive, doesn't make any difference at all. No copays, no deductible charges, no coinsurance, no anything. In addition to, you know, providing that guidance to the insurance company, we also have been quite aggressive about contacting providers where there's been violations of that policy, because they are not to be billing anyone. In fact, we had a recent situation where we had to make a call to a hospital that was inappropriately billing someone who had gone to the emergency room for their test. So that is the situation here. I don't deny that there have been some circumstances where people are being charged, but if that happens, we hope they'll do one of two things. One, either call our office at 833-415-0566 or go to our website and let us know about the circumstance. That phone number is staffed from 8 to 6, Monday through Saturday. So we are intervening whenever we learn about these particular circumstances. It's important to note, too, that these provisions about no charges to patients applies not to regular commercial insurance. It also applies to Medicaid. It also applies to individuals who have health insurance through their employer. So we've tried to be aggressive on that. Another thing that we did to try to control cost-related issues is we issued guidance and said there can be no out-of-network charges to an individual for getting a COVID test or treatment, that during this public health emergency, wherever someone goes, the insurance company or the insurer, if it's an employer, has to cover that as an in-network charge. And that, coupled with our state law and our regulations on prohibiting surprise billing in most circumstances has really gone a long way to prevent financial burden on people.
What should the uninsured expect at this point?
It's a good question. The federal government and the State Department of the Human Services Department, the state Medicaid program, have monies from the federal government to cover the uninsured. So, again, those folks should not be charged either. The federal and our guidance says whether you're insured or uninsured, whether you're in-network or out-of-network, there cannot be a charge to the individual.
Now, hospitals are being reimbursed, are they not, by the federal government?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the insurance company, even though there's a no charge to you or me as an individual to get testing, the insurance company is being billed by the healthcare provider for the cost of the assessment, the cost of the test, and any related items associated with that. So, I mean, it's not that it's free. Mm-hmm. It's just provided without charge to the individual, because neither we nor the federal government wanted there to be any barriers to stop people from getting tested.
Gotcha. Before we move on to, you know, what's happening now and what we can anticipate for the future, I want to look back a little bit a few years ago when the Affordable Care Act was passed. And I want to talk about what that did to numbers of uninsured here in New Mexico.
It had a huge impact in reducing the number of uninsured. I mean, it is literally one of the best things that has happened in terms of making health care available to particularly low-income New Mexicans. You know, my hat is off and has been to Governor Martinez for having the political courage to say this is something that we need to do. It wasn't popular for a Republican governor to do that at the time, but it has proven to provide not just a healthy benefit to people, but a huge economic benefit to the state. I think most people don't appreciate what a major economic driver and salvation in some respect it's been to the healthcare and medical communities who otherwise would be serving huge numbers of the uninsured. As you probably are aware, you know, several hundred thousand people became eligible for coverage in this program, which for a long time was paid for 100% by the federal government and is now paid for 90% by the federal government. And it, under the current law, will not drop below that. And if I may, Casey, without trying to be political, I mean, folks need to be aware that the effort in front of the U.S. Supreme Court this fall to repeal and do away with the Affordable Care Act will probably have a larger and most negative impact on the state of New Mexico than almost any state in the country. We have a larger percentage of our population covered by public health insurance programs than any other. But more importantly, for every individual in the state, it's the Affordable Care Act that prohibits an insurer from saying you can't have insurance because you have a pre-existing condition. So the protections that are in the ACA are really important to every one of us who's at risk of developing some kind of condition which could cause our insurance costs to either go up dramatically or to have an insurer be given the ability to cancel your insurance. So we hope that the Supreme Court will uphold the law. I'm pleased our delegation and our Attorney General has weighed in on behalf of the act. I think that's really, really important.
It looked like there was a graph that showed the numbers of uninsured in New Mexico from before the Affordable Care Act was passed to the years since its passage. And we were up somewhere around 28% of New Mexicans, give or take, who did not have insurance. And that,
that's right,
if I'm not mistaken, was cut in half.
That's right. It's down around 12% now, which is really great, which is really great. You know, children and people who are at risk for a variety of reasons really need access to early intervention health care before conditions worsen. And that's what this ACA expansion did. I also think it's important to highlight that particularly in Medicaid, there are a lot of services offered in terms of behavioral health, mental health services, that are really essential to many people to leading functional and productive lives. And I think that's something that we often overlook. Medicaid is there for the people who need health coverage the most. And it's actually done a really good job. Unlike other states, New Mexico does not have any co-pays or premiums to folks who are on Medicaid. And of course, as you know, the Medicaid eligibility groups are made up disproportionately of children.
575-646-2212. It is 120. This is Voice of the Public. Our guest this afternoon is New Mexico's insurance superintendent, Russell Toll, who is here to answer your questions about coverage moving forward. Now that we've talked a little bit about what happened in the past with the ACA and how the Medicaid expansion was so crucial for New Mexico, then comes coronavirus, and many people have lost their jobs, and as a result, the insurance that was actually tied to their jobs. What do you know about those numbers now?
Well, it's a little unclear. We thought we would see a larger jump in both people seeking coverage through the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange and through Medicaid. And we have seen an increase in Medicaid enrollment, so much so that I think by the end of this calendar year, we're going to be looking at close to 880,000 New Mexicans covered by the Medicaid program. Mm-hmm. Normally, you would see a very slight increase on a monthly basis in the Medicaid program, but the total enrollment is jumping somewhere between 1.5% and 2% on a monthly basis. So those numbers are going up. Ironically, on the health insurance exchange, we've not seen that kind of jump. Now, there has been an increase in the number of individuals who are buying health and coverage on their own. Those numbers have gone up, but again, not the kind of numbers we would expect to see. They've gone up about 20,000 statewide. We've got open enrollment coming up in the fall, and I hope many people will sign up. But to the point you made quite so well, if you lose your job, your first order of business is trying to keep housing and keeping food on the table. So buying health insurance, I'm sure, is not in their very top priorities. And we understand that. We are working hard as we review health plan proposals to be offered on the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange to make sure that those plans offer the greatest value possible.
And where does one go to learn more about what's available to them through the exchange?
Well, they can go to bewellnm.com, but also on our website, there is a resource there that it's a tool that they can easily access from our website homepage, and that'll let them know what sort of coverage they qualify for. If they can get Medicaid coverage, that, of course, is the best for them. It's the most comprehensive coverage, and it has no cost sharing whatsoever. They may, if they don't qualify for Medicaid, they may qualify for the health insurance exchange. And I think many people don't know, and we need to fix this, that if they purchase what's known as a silver medal plan, their income may qualify them for premium reductions being subsidized by the federal government, again, as part of the Affordable Care Act. So their premiums could be dramatically reduced, making those health plans affordable. If they're not eligible for Medicaid or the health insurance exchange, the third option is the New Mexico Medical Insurance Pool, the so-called high-risk pool. And again, that pool also offers discounted premiums for lower-income individuals. So we're fortunate in the state that we have three good options, and we've got this calculator there. We did a joint publication effort to let people know about how they could access these services and, as I said, make that screening tool available to everybody. We've shared it with every broker and agent in the state, and we've also put it out in social media to advocacy groups and others. The open enrollment period starts in, I believe it's December 1, or it might be in November. I should have that in front of me, but I don't. But there will be a lot of publicity about that, and we encourage people to see what makes sense for their unique situation. There is both individual and family coverage available, by the way.
The window seems to have gotten smaller over the last few years. Why is that?
Well, because that's what the federal government has done. It's not something we support, but it's not something we control. The other thing that they've done is, which we strongly object to, is they've raised the maximum out-of-pocket amounts that an individual could be subject to in these plans. Now, the legislature, to their credit, this past regular session in January, passed a bill that will enable the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange to become a state-sponsored exchange as opposed to one that's dependent on the federal government. So that will give us the ability to set broader, longer enrollment periods, allow us to design our own health plan options, which we really can't do right now, and also change the way that those plans are marketed and made available. You know, one of the very big frustrations that we had is that we in almost all states begged the Trump administration, the CMS people, to have an open special enrollment period for people who had lost jobs, and that wasn't done for whatever reason. If we had our own state-based exchange, we could have made that decision like some of the other state-based exchanges did.
Mm. 127 now, and we have Charlie holding on the line for Voice of the Public. Good afternoon, Charlie. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. So my situation is I am self-employed and either fortunately or unfortunately make just enough money to be outside of the health insurance program that subsidizes. So I pay a full premium, and my premiums with Molina work out to be like $9,000 a year. And my question to you is there no way for me to get cheaper catastrophic insurance for health, for major events, health events in my life, and then use a health savings plan to cover all my more routine doctor's appointments and, you know, tests and stuff like that? Because by the time I get done paying the deductible in order to get health insurance to kick in, I'd have to pay an additional, I think, $4,000 above my premiums in deductibles in order to get that relationship going with the insurance. So why is it so hard or almost impossible to find catastrophic low premium insurance in New Mexico?
Well, it's not a problem just in New Mexico. This is an issue nationwide. But I think the answer to your question is working with a good insurance broker, health insurance broker, you might be able to arrange such a thing. There are certainly lots of examples where individuals are using health savings accounts for those kinds of purposes. So I would encourage you to talk to a broker. But the other thing I wanted to mention to you is that in this fall's open enrollment period for the health exchange, I think you will see more options than you have in the past. And some of those options might be more attractive to you. In fact, you know, I can't say too much because we haven't finished our reviews, but the silver and gold plans are going to be better than what's been offered in the past. Are they ideal? No, they are not. But they're certainly more attractive. And as I said to Casey a little while ago, we are pushing to make sure that those plans offer the maximum value that is allowed under the Affordable Care Act.
Well, and that will certainly be most welcome, I guarantee you, for me, because basically it's just the premiums alone are about 16% of my income. So
yeah, that's a problem.
Charlie, have you spoken with a broker yet?
No, to be honest with you, I have no idea where you go to. I mean, you know, where insurance brokers
live. Where do they hide?
Yeah, where do they hide? Which rock do I live on?
Well, I think if you can look, and I know there are plenty in Las Cruces for, you know, a truly full-service insurance agency that offers health insurance, I would encourage you to meet with them, explain your situation, and see what they can put together for you.
If I may understand in short, if you can, explain to me, are insurance companies from other places in the United States not able to insure people in New Mexico for whatever, any number of reasons? Or, I mean, is there...
They can't. No, they can't. They have to be registered. They have to be licensed with us. They have to submit what we refer to as a filing indicating what plans they intend to sell in New Mexico. It is true that not all health insurers sell all their plans in every state. You know, one of the biggest health insurers in the country is Anthem, based in Indianapolis. They don't sell products here. But many of the others do, like Cigna and United, and as you know, we have a fairly large Blue Cross plan here. So it just depends on the decision of the insurance company. We can't compel them to sell a particular plan here. And in fact, our responsibility is really to make sure that the plans that are being sold here meet all the statutory requirements in New Mexico, and also that the plan is a financially solvent one.
Right. I understood. So, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your call. Thanks.
Good luck, Charlie. I feel for you. You know, most is health or medical costs still the number one reason that Americans declare bankruptcy?
I haven't seen recent statistics. I suspect with COVID that may change, but it certainly historically has been the main reason that people file for bankruptcy. When I was working in another state, one of the things that I did was work at a couples shelter. It was the only couples shelter in the city of Atlanta. And I was astounded by how many people ended up in that shelter because of a health condition. Now, fortunately, that's gotten better with the Affordable Care Act. But there are still high costs. And combating the increasing deductibles and maximum out-of-pockets is part of our mission to try to keep those as low as possible. Casey, if I may, you know, Charlie's question as a man who's self-employed raised another point I wanted to bring up. We didn't, on COVID, just look at health insurance issues, although those were obviously most important. But we also compelled the auto insurers to provide refunds or credits to New Mexico auto policy holders because the policy holders weren't driving. The number of accidents in the state dropped dramatically. And you may have seen our recent release on this. Almost $67 million was returned to New Mexico policyholders as a result of our action. And the other thing that we did for business owners, we said to those insurers who base their business insurance on operating hours, number of employees, sales volume, or anything of the sort. We asked all of them to look at their rates, look at the circumstances in the particular business, and make adjustments or give credits where those were appropriate because the business was not operating at the same level it was before. And then finally, to all insurers, didn't matter what type of insurance, we asked for some forbearance for folks who couldn't make their premium payments in time or in full. And we asked them not to cancel, to work out payment arrangements, and to see what they could do to try to minimize that cost impact on folks.
It is 135, and 575-646-2212 is the number to call to ask the Superintendent of Insurance for New Mexico, Russell Toll, a question. Whatever's on your mind, we're glad to have you along. You might be following along on Facebook, and you're free to make a comment there. We're watching there as well. Our engineer, Jacob Lockwood, ready to take your call at 646-2212 in the time we have left, of course. So get in soon if you have a question. Now is the time to call. Let's move on now to some of the changes that we're going to be seeing moving from this year to next year. Recently, New Mexico Health Connections, which I think served about 14,000 consumers in New Mexico, announced that it would be leaving the exchange. And so what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, they're one of the few health cooperatives left in the country, and they contracted out their administrative responsibilities last year to a company out of Colorado, and that has gone well. We know a lot of questions have arisen about that. We have on our website, we have a resource page for people and a list of frequently asked questions. The bottom line for the 14,000 people or so who are covered by New Mexico Health Connections is they can continue to use their plan and be assured that their services are going to be covered and the providers will be paid through the end of the year. And arrangements have been put in place to make sure that if somebody, for example, has a doctor or hospital visit in December and that claim doesn't come in before the end of the year, that there are mechanisms in place to ensure that that claim gets paid and the individual is held harmless. We will see, as I mentioned earlier, plenty of offerings on the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange to replace those plans that were offered by New Mexico Health Connections. And I did find out here that the date for open enrollment, by the way, is November 1, not December 1. It's November 1, and we hope people will make themselves available of all those different options and make a good choice. One other thing I might want to mention, you know, we cannot recommend a specific broker or agent,
right,
but if they go to the BeWellNM.com website, there is a list of qualified brokers there. And so they could do a search by locale and find out a broker who is in the health insurance business, is familiar with the health exchange, and might be able to help folks like Charlie with his particular problem.
All right, let's get back to the phone now. 575-646-2212, the telephone number. To be part of Voice of the Public on KRWG, Seal has been holding with a question. Good afternoon, Seal.
Hey, hi. I have a question about the responsibility of the insurance companies that put forth their plans in New Mexico. I'm from Colorado, and there were a number of plans that came through that were reasonable. They cherry-picked young people, and as soon as all of their people got old, they left the state. Now, what does New Mexico have in place to prevent companies from just cherry-picking and then leaving?
Well, their marketing policies, their advertising, and the requirements that they have to meet and not just with us, but with the Federal Affordable Care Act, really prevent that sort of thing from happening. And also, when we have a situation like is true with New Mexico Health Connections, we have an ability, and we will be, automatically enrolling people into similar plans. You know, one of the things that we issued earlier this year, which I'm particularly pleased about, is that we issued new regulations on what constitutes deceptive advertising and marketing. And where we find that, we're taking aggressive action. And we've done that against a number of companies. One of the things that is a constant battle, I'm just being painfully honest here, are the fly-by-night internet programs that are offered. Frequently, the materials are not registered with our office. The company may not be registered with our office. The broker or the salesperson may not be registered with us. And so we try to take actions to stop that sort of thing where it's brought to our attention.
But great. Thank you very much.
It was a good question.
You sound satisfied.
Well, I'm glad New Mexico is making an effort. Colorado got kind of blown away by a lot of companies.
Interesting.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate hearing from you, Seal. 575-646-2212. There was a question that came in off air from Tom, and you know, we often speak of the digital divide that still exists here in New Mexico, who doesn't have access to the internet and really wants to know, is there a place where he can go and talk to somebody about this information in Las Cruces?
I don't have a number specifically in Las Cruces, but he should feel free to call our regular line, that COVID line, 833-415-0566, and present his question, and they will direct him to the right folks who can help.
All right. Thank you very much. And if you still have a question for the Superintendent of Insurance for New Mexico, Russell Toll, give us a call so you can be part of the show before we run out of time at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Let's move on to some of the news about prescription drug prices and some of the efforts to lower some of those costs.
I'm glad you brought that up. The legislature this past year passed two important pieces of legislation. One, House Bill 292, which was sponsored, by the way, by Representative Micaela Cadena there from Las Cruces. It puts a cap, a copay cap, on the amount that people can be charged for insulin. As I'm sure you know and your listeners know, for people who are dependent on insulin, it is absolutely critical that they are able to maintain their drug regimen, can take their insulin on time and when needed. And we've had way too many reports in the state of people who could not afford the costs that were being posed. So what this bill does is for the health plan year that begins January 1, there will be a maximum monthly charge, copay charge, of $25 for any of the insulin products that are on a health insurer's preferred health plan, preferred health drugs plan. That's a huge savings to many people. There was lots of testimony when this bill was being debated of people who were spending upwards of $400 on a monthly basis, and for many people that is absolutely prohibitive. So this will cap that cost at $25. Now, the other important thing about that bill is that it directed our office to create an advisory committee to look at nine other drug categories. They're called therapeutic categories, and see whether there are the same kind of cost barriers for these essential medications. So we have a study going on right now to gather information, to try to do an assessment what the copay cost is, and determine whether it might be appropriate to place some kind of cap on those products as well? And if so, to make some recommendation about where those caps should be. Some of these are products that I know your listeners are very familiar with, like the products that are taken for to control diabetes, or the injectable devices for individuals who run the risk of having severe allergic reactions, medications to take hypertension or antipsychotic medications, and lipid-lowering agents, and a few others as well. So I think this demonstrates that members of both parties were very sensitive to this issue of the cost of prescription drugs in the last session, and they wanted to see that some action is taken. The second bill, which I hope will be of interest to your listeners, is Senate Bill 1, the highest priority bill in the Senate, recommended by the governor to have the state prepare a plan to go to the federal government for approval to import drugs from Canada. As you know, the United States essentially underwrites drug costs for the rest of the world. And that's a whole debate for another
discussion.
Yeah. But that is the reality of it. So the products that are sold in Canada are sold at a significantly lower price. Last year, the Food and Drug Administration issued draft regulations allowing states to submit proposals for importation of drugs. To do so, a state has to demonstrate that it has all the same safety safeguards in place that drugs sold in the United States do. So there have been five or six states that are preparing proposals. Some have already gone in. And we were directed to also conduct a study to see what potential savings might be here in New Mexico. We are pulling that data. We will have a public hearing later this fall about what our proposed plan, and people will have an opportunity for input. We have to do this in conjunction, as we should, with the State Board of Pharmacy, which regulates pharmaceuticals in the state. And we, of course, have to meet all the FDA requirements. Now, the president has announced that the Food and Drug Administration will issue final regulations on this before the end of the year. I hope that's true. I hope we see those rules. And I hope the rules continue to make importation possible under these same kind of strict guidelines. Now, whether we can all make that happen in the way that we'd like, I don't know. But it has the potential for causing New Mexicans to realize significant cost savings. And, of course, those cost savings would be passed on to the insurance companies and then the folks that they insure. So much work to be done, but I think the fact that that bill passed, I think, almost unanimously, if it wasn't unanimously, in the session, again, speaks to the recognition that both parties have about the need to try to curb drug costs.
Seems like it should be easy.
it seems like it should be, but it's not.
No.
And there's one other piece of this that I know pharmacists across the state care about tremendously, and that is they want us to be more aggressive in regulating the companies who control dispensing and pricing of drugs, the so-called pharmacy benefit managers. We share that interest, but we have to wait for the U.S. Supreme Court to make a decision on what the role of the states can be in regulating these pharmacy benefit managers, because obviously this is a case of interstate commerce. So,
do we know when that's going to be coming before the court?
Hopefully this fall.
Okay.
Frankly, we had hoped there would be a decision earlier, but That hasn't happened.
All right. Well, let's get back to the phone with apologies to Robert, who has been holding for a while with a question for you, Mr. Toll. Good afternoon, Robert. Thank you for calling and for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. I missed a portion of your show earlier. I understood that there should be no charges to any person that gets COVID tested in any way. But what if he has to be seen by a doctor or hospitalized? Do the co-pays of him, his health insurance, kick in and all the deductibles? Or how does that work? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I'm happy to try to clarify. If the reason you're going to the doctor or the hospital is to have a COVID test or the assessment to determine whether a COVID test is necessary, there is to be no charges to you as an individual. No co-pays, no deductibles, no co-insurance, anything of the sort. If one is hospitalized for the treatment of COVID-19, the same rules apply. No co-pays, no deductibles, no co-insurance. Now, if I as an individual go to the doctor for a COVID test, and I get that assessment, I may even have the test done, but I also have other things done. It is possible that you could be hit with some cost for those other things. But if the principal reason you're going is to get the COVID test, there should be no charges to you as an individual.
And moving on to, you know, the treatment and whatnot, that's, you know, your copays that are associated with that. That is coming to the patient, correct?
It should not. If they go in for treatment, whether it's in a doctor's office or it's in an ambulatory care center, emergency room, or hospital itself, there should be no charge for the COVID treatment. No
Not
co-pays,
even a copay. Okay.
Nothing.
Thank you for clearing that up. It's hard to follow along. It's such a big topic, and it's one that you see, you know, just from friends and loved ones who might be going through health issues, that it just seems like they have to fight when they're sick. They have to fight all along the way throughout the process to make sure that they have things covered and taken care of. And it seems like just such a frustrating process for everyone.
Well, I agree with you. It is a frustrating and a confusing process for individuals. I think that's why you hear so much demand at the national level for meaningful health care reform. I'd be the first person to say the Affordable Care Act is not perfect. It made huge improvements, and it stopped people from being excluded from health insurance coverage in the way that they used to. But it certainly can be improved upon, and I hope that that will happen. One of the barriers that every member of this, of our great nation, faces is all the hassle and administrative confusion related to just getting basic or sometimes more sophisticated health services. We need to try to fix that.
Moving forward into next year, so you said that the number one bill before the Senate would be Senate Bill 1, and our special session, of course, not special session, but the regular session will convene in January. How likely does it look at this point that that will move forward?
Well, the bill's already been passed, so the issue is getting the application pulled together and submitting it to the federal government. So there will certainly be legislative review on that. But, you know, the cost to pull together the application and do the submission is actually already in the budget. So it's not something the legislature will have to work on next session. As you well know, they're going to be very busy with budget matters. One very nice thing about the way New Mexico structured this office, the Office of Superintendent Insurance, is we do not get any general funds, any tax revenues that are appropriated to the department. We are funded completely by the fees that are paid by insurance companies and by all those people who have to license with us. And those fees cover way more than our actual costs. Our total budget's about $40 million, but if one were to add all the premium taxes and everything else that are paid, you're looking in excess of $200 to $300 million. So we're a revenue generator for the state, and we're pleased to be able to be a contributor. We're not a large office. There's less than 90 people in our office, and we're staffed at a level far below most states. But, you know, it's a good group of people, and we're trying to do things in a very proactive way now with a whole new focus on being, A, more public, and B, more consumer-friendly than has been true in the past.
Well, when you mention consumer friendliness, do you offer consumer advocacy?
Yes.
So if someone is having a difficulty, you know, getting through that process and feel like they're in a losing battle, would you recommend it's your office that they should call?
We contact them. I mean, they should contact us if there's an issue with their insurance company. Now, if they have an issue with an individual provider, that's not something we are authorized to be involved with, the single exception of if it's a COVID-related matter. But if it's anything else, they have to deal with other mechanisms to get those issues resolved. But if it's a problem with an insurance company's not doing what they're supposed to, they're either charging them too much, they're refusing to pay for something, they can't access their policy benefits in the way they need to, then absolutely we want them contacting us. You know, Casey, one of the things that we're hoping we will get permission from the legislature to do, by the way, is to open an office in Las Cruces. We have a presence here in Santa Fe. We have an office in Albuquerque. But, you know, we think it's important to have a presence in southern New Mexico. And hopefully we'll get permission to open a small office there so we can directly provide service to people who are in need of help.
I wanted to circle back around in my gosh, just the couple of minutes that we have left to the Medicaid expansion under Governor Martinez. And you mentioned, you know, how important and how critical that was for New Mexico. Recently, there was a study that came out that said in the states that did that Medicaid expansion, they specifically looked at women fighting advanced breast cancer and found that those numbers were cut in half. Of women who were fighting advanced breast cancer who did not have insurance, and then the women who were saved from going to that advanced stage was also very significant. So, you know, clearly there has been some benefit, and for Governor Martinez to have made that expansion, you know, you said hats off, and your hat's off and remains off. Why was there so much pushback, and why didn't every state do it?
It's a good question. Unfortunately, I got caught up in ideology, political ideology. You know, the vast majority of the states now, it's close to 40 states, I think 36 states, 34, you know, have expanded the program. I think some of the original concerns that the feds were going to pull the funding, you know, have not materialized. And the health benefits are quite real. You know, getting early access to care for early diagnosis, for early treatment, as you noted in the case of breast cancer, but there are plenty others.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference. I mean, birth outcomes are better because people have access to early prenatal care and the folks get the continuing care that they need, not just during their program, not during their pregnancy, but after. So, it really is a huge benefit, and I think the legislature in New Mexico gets great credit that both parties have talked repeatedly and put their votes behind and their money behind continuing support of the Medicaid program and the expansion. There really has been no serious discussion of any kind about rolling that back, and our hopes now, you know, reside with the Supreme Court, and that they will not send us back to the dark days of major uninsurance and people being told they can't have health insurance because they had a heart attack some years ago, or they have cancer, or even that they're at risk of cancer. My family has a history of high cholesterol and all kinds of other heart-related conditions. And before the Affordable Care Act, I had trouble getting access to insurance, even though I was doing all the right things and taking all the medications, and my blood pressure and cholesterol and everything else were all under control. But then there was what is known as medical underwriting, and the health insurance companies didn't want to assume the risk that I was going to have some heart attack down the road. So by pooling the communities in these large numbers, they've been able to minimize the individual risk and been able to extend premiums. You know, I do want to also mention before we get off that New Mexico has had the third lowest premiums on our health insurance exchange of any state in the country. Our premiums are really low. Part of that has to do with the process we go through and the scrutiny we put those plans through. But I am hopeful that the folks on this call will see even more attractive premiums in November.
Well, thank you so much for spending the last hour with us, Superintendent of Insurance, Russell Toll. It was great to have you on the program today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And it's time for NPR News and Leora Zeitlin coming up next.